Hello everyone. Today I'm doing part two. Second, I did a interview with Blaine Duizing. I guess how long ago, Blaine? Maybe a couple months back?
Yeah, 2-3 months ago, maybe.
2-3 months ago. And I'm very happy to have Blaine back again. Blaine resides in Florida. He runs a personal training business. He also, one of the things that when I first met Blaine was somehow or other, I'm not sure how I first found your page, but anyways, if you're on Facebook and you check out Blaine's Hit page, it's called Blaine's Hit page, and there's some a really cool community there. And we were talking just before, it's people, there are personal trainers on there. There are just people who are fitness enthusiasts, and there's good interaction. What's really, I think, sets the page apart is there's a real cool respect. Nobody's bickering, arguing, things like that. Everybody's just looking to learn and things like that. And it's becoming more and more popular. There's more and more people that are on it. So thank you for taking the time again, Blaine, and welcome back to another chat with Rick, if you will. So we were talking before we got on, we were talking about form.
Yes.
And standards and form and things like that. And Blaine, you were saying that recently with the tutelage of Doug Simmons and Drew Bay, that you feel like you've really sharpened up your form and really worked on turnarounds and slow and how you feel it better and you know, results. But not to put words in your mouth, can you just elaborate a bit on what we were talking about before we started?
Sure. Yeah. Like I said, I kind of joked around about Doug and Drew turning me into a somewhat of a super slow snob. So now when I see a form that's, you know, not up to par or expectations, I just kind of, I don't know, giggle or shake my head. But that's not to say that, you know, that's the end all be all. What I was explaining to you is since I guess when Doug came out here and actually showed me in person how to do it properly. And then I, in turn, I think a month or two later, went out and drove out to Alamon Springs with Drew. It just felt right to me. And I initially had to back the weights off a little bit to get that speed down. And now I'm at the point where I'm stronger using slower speed than I was doing 3-3 or 5-5. And like I said, if other people want to use different speeds, I think as long as you don't incorporate momentum, it's going to be beneficial. Just for me personally and my clients, I just really hit that 10-10 mark and it just feels perfect for me. And I don't think I'll ever deviate away from it.
Well, one of the things that I've noticed too, and I at different times, I do different things. And sometimes it's because of substandard equipment. Mm-hmm. Because certain equipment doesn't lend itself to really strict super slow. But I know that one of the things, not just the moving slowly, but, you know, Doug Simmons, I did a thing where I watched a video of him, turnarounds, really mm-hmm. good turnarounds. So can you, in your words, explain to me, what is a good or perfect turnaround and why are turnarounds so important?
I think to answer one part, turnarounds are so important because it minimizes the initial momentum that people try to get. Like if you're using a chest press, for example, I think a lot of people, especially as they fatigue, want to gun out 6 to 8 inches, which then alleviate, you know, makes it simplistic. And, you know, basically what Doug taught me is even as you fatigue, come out of those turnarounds even slower and purposely make it harder. Because at the end of the day, repetitions don't matter. Your body doesn't know what a repetition is. And so I just, ever since I learned that, it just feels so much better. And it's a better pump. And I've gotten, you know, in better shape because of it. And again, I see people that don't do it. Is it going to make or break a workout? I don't think so. I just do it for myself and my clients because I just think it's imperative. And once you know how to do it, pain you actually have to mentally withstand is astronomical.
Right.
Especially
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, especially like during a pull down, like when you're fatigued and you're in that top position, to purposely try to come down even slower is just mentally brutal because it goes against everything is screaming at you to do. It's telling you to go faster to finish the last two reps. Whereas if I learned from, Doug and Drew, it two or three reps that might be crappy, only try for one or two more, but do them purposely even slower. And it just makes it that brutal, that much more safe because you have a 0% chance of injury. And sorry, the computer's acting up again, I guess. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, it said our connection was dropped for a sec. Hope that answered it. I kind of lost my train of thought with that computer going out.
Well, just on the turnaround. So first of all, for people listening who may not be familiar with the term, so what we're referring to is the part of the repetition where you change direction, either at the top or at the bottom. And I know I remember reading as you were talking or listening to Doug McGuff. And he was talking about speed of movement. And one of the things he said is, and he said particularly on the first rep, that you really go out of your way to make sure that the first inch starts, takes 2 or 3 seconds. And then he says, and then after that, you don't have to count the speed. The speed will sort of organically take care of itself. And I haven't tried that, but I do know that I like to think that my form is pretty good until I watch Doug Simmons' turnarounds. And I talked about that. His turnarounds are so, I mean, you just get it type of thing, because he just eases in and just barely starts. And you're right, just doing that alone will make a huge difference.
Yeah, and it's so much harder. And I don't know where people's misconception, because a lot of questions I get about super slow is I don't want to have to use lighter weight. You don't have to use lighter weight. I backed off maybe for 2 or 3 weeks just so I could get the form down, but then my weights actually increased. So I'm pushing and pulling and doing legs heavier than I was before at a slower speed, which is actually harder and in my, opinion, more beneficial.
Yeah, well, John Parr, do you know John? Is John on your
He
page?
is, yeah, he is in my group, yeah.
Yeah, so John has told me that he ha rarely even raises the weights for his clients once he gets them, his expression, dialed in. And he told me that he's been using the same weights on machines for himself for the last 10 years. And that he's put on 10 pounds of muscles in the last 10 years. And John is, I think John is about 50, early 50s. So he's been training a long time. He played hockey at a high level. So, he's not, these are not newbie gains. But what he's measuring, if you will, is the ability to inroad, i.e., fatigue the muscles more and more effectively. And it just focuses on his clients getting better and better form.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. And anybody in the HIIT community that is, dead set on you have to beat every rep, every workout, every this or that, it's a literal impossibility because you're going to plateau eventually. And my weights barely go up. I mean, I've probably been at the same weights for the better part of a year, and just maybe 3 or 4 workouts ago, I trained with my friend Mike every Saturday, and I usually put, I don't know, 140 or 150 on the pull down, and it felt light. So I've been at 160, and I've been getting about 5 reps, which is about, a minute and a half. Six reps at my speed is a full 2 minutes. And the other day, I already got 6 reps, so I was already hitting a 2 minute TUL with the heaviest weight on a pull down I've ever had. But it, I don't expect that to go up again for another couple months, if not a year. And again, who cares? Ride that weight out. Because realistically, in my mid-40s, how much stronger do I need to be if I can slowly pull down 160 to 180 pounds for 2 minutes?
Well, and I think, well, I actually, you made me think of one thing, but I had one. Have you ever had this experience? And I'll describe it to you and see, and John, you're demonstrating an exercise for a new client or a newer client, and you're doing it with a really light weight, much less than you usually use. But of course, you're doing your darndest to be a good role model and do it as well as you can. And as you're doing it, in your mind, you're going, "Holy shit, why is this 40 pounds on the decline press Actually, this feels hard because you've dialed it way down, but you're doing it, so strictly and whatnot that all of a sudden you realize that have you had that experience?
To purposely like demonstrate to somebody a lighter weight, or just like I had a
Well,
brand new.
just because when you're demonstrating it, you're likely not going to use your working weight to show a new client.
Right, but I don't think I've ever thought it was heavy. I had a brand new client start actually this morning, so I talked to her for about 30 minutes, and I can generally pin every single machine if I'm showing a new client at about 100 pounds, whether it be a chest press or a row or a pull down, and that's light enough where I can get three or four demonstration reps and not start to shake or not start to have to, But yeah, I can. No, I don't ever think it's really heavy, but again, something I learned from Doug and Drew, you could take, if I were to just come over in your facility and train with you, you could guess a weight for me. And off the first push or pull, I could probably know where I'm at as far as slowing down the first couple reps or speeding up where I need to speed up to still hit failure and make it an amazing workout in 2 minutes, just because I'm that experienced with it. So again, you gotta think of it as not as moving weight, but what you're doing to your muscle with the weight, And I stole that from Drew Bay as well, because I learned something from all these guys that when they tell me that, and he said, just think of it as a fuel tank. You're just gonna empty it out. Don't think about moving weight. Think of whatever muscle you're working as a fuel tank and just slowly just empty it until you physically can't take any more discomfort.
What you're referring to is the primary versus the secondary objective of an exercise, right? And earlier you talked about people who said, "Oh, I don't want to reduce the weight by moving slowly." And of course, if somebody says that, they're obviously not considering the primary purpose, which is to fatigue the muscles. They're still thinking about how much weight can I lift, how many times, which is a secondary objective. Do you have clients who are curious about how much weight they're lifting and how much more they've lifted and things like that, where you have to sort of talk them down and make them realize that they're focusing on the wrong thing? Have you had that experience?
Not particularly in Naples, Florida, only because the demographic here is mostly older retired folks in their 50s and 60s. So just getting introduced to this and from the client seeing every day, just results from such a short amount of time, but such a stimulating impact in the, 25 minutes or less, after they've wasted years jogging and doing all this other stuff that's rendered them injuries. So no, I could see in other trainers' cases, you might have younger guys that want to be pushing the envelope, but most of my clients, I have a couple in their 40s. Most of my clients are in their 50s, 60s, and 70s. So I don't have the problem of them wanting to beat the record book.
How much do you communicate as to what they've lifted, how many times, things like that? Or do you just put them in the machine, whatnot, they don't care to go in and out? Or do you tell them, well, good, that was a new weight and you did an extra rep or.
Oh, absolutely, I do. Yeah, I keep all their records. I keep a little green spiral notebook. I have all the dates, everything recorded. And if they can get, again, six reps is about 2 minutes. If they can get anything more than six reps, then I up their weight by 2.5 to 5 pounds. And then they're back down to 4.5, 5 reps. And they'll usually stay there for 3, 4, 5 weeks. And then if they can get past the 2 minute mark, then you gradually up them. But again, people of that age range, after about a year of training, they're going to be plateaued and you're just going to be dialed into knowing where their seat settings are and the weights they're going to use.
So in our community too, there's a lot of talk, not just about form, but frequency and volume. And if you're training people, so let's say that you're independently wealthy and you had no other commitments, so you didn't have to work around a schedule, and it was just you, and then you could decide, I'm going to work out. On the third day, the second day, the fifth day, the eighth day, whatever it is, because it doesn't matter because you have no other commitments, right?
Correct.
But for most people, virtually everyone, the challenge is if they're coming to see you once a week or they're coming to see you twice a week, it's kind of hard with clients to change their frequency, because you're going to go, what do you go from once a week to once every 2 weeks is too big of a jump.
Yeah.
That type of thing. So you play with volume and play with those types of things. I I tend to think, I'll tell you where I land on this, and I want you to challenge me and tell me,
Okay.
as I think in terms of just train, well, we come back to volume. Right now, I'll just talk about frequency, because of course I can decrease the volume with clients. That's fairly easy. Or increase, as the case may be. But I look at it from the point of view that I just train at a certain frequency and rather figure out, oh, I need to add an extra day or I need to add whatever, is that eventually overtraining will likely occur. But also what will spontaneously happen is I'll go on a holiday, client will go on a holiday, they'll have a conflict and they'll have to miss a workout, things like that. Example, today I had a gentleman around here, it's deer hunting season.
Okay.
So he was out hunting deer. He came back with a little bit of a cough. I told him to give it a few extra days. So when he came here today, he hadn't been here for about 2.5 weeks. He had the best workout he's had in a long time.
Knocked it out of the
So,
park.
yeah, so instead of me trying to really overanalyze it, I feel that it sort of happened spontaneously. Interestingly, during the COVID thing, because nobody was going to funerals, nobody was going to weddings, nobody was going to taking holidays and traveling, I had people who
Shit.
didn't miss enough workouts.
Where'd you go? I lost you. Man.
Am I frozen or gone?
I don't see you anymore. What the hell? Oh, there it is. Okay, sorry about that. I don't know what happened.
Did you lose my last sentence or two?
No. You just said, they're coming back after a week or two off and they come back stronger. And I mean, no sense in psychoanalyzing it, I suppose. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I'm just thinking rather than overanalyze frequency, just train. And if it becomes apparent that you are overtrained, then just say, okay, skip. I've told clients, you know what I want you to do? I said, I want you to stay away for a week or two, come back. But generally, I don't have to do that. I had to do that during the pandemic because nobody was taking breaks because they weren't going anywhere because there were no weddings, there were no traveling, there was nothing. But
Yeah.
typically, I don't have to because it spontaneously happens. They get invited to a wedding, they go out of town, they go on a holiday, whatever it is, and it just happens spontaneously. So it's not really an issue.
No, not an issue here either. Yeah, holidays are coming up. I'll have a ton of cancellations. I usually have people cancel for, whatever reasons. But I don't know. I answer so many questions online about exercise order and frequency, and there is never going to be a perfect response.
Right.
You could ask me, you, Doug, Drew, Jay, all the same question. We're going to give all different answers, and we're all going to be correct
Well,
because there's no right answer.
my typical answer, sometimes I'll switch something around, a client will say, why are we doing this one before that one? And I'll say, tell you the truth, it was just convenient for today. It probably won't make any difference one
No.
way or the other,
It's not
right?
going to make a lick of difference. I think it's the only thing with exercise order that I insist on is start with compound movements and alternate between pushing and pulling movements. So if you start with a pull down, go to a chest press, then go to a row, then go
Right.
to an overhead press, and so on. Never go from a chest press to an overhead press. But other than that, I don't think it matters if you want to start with an overhead press, a leg press. Who cares?
How many exercises would you have your clients or yourself do in one session?
I don't have my clients do any more than eight.
Okay.
Eight is the absolute maximum, and they are cooked after that. And some don't even want to do the seventh or eighth exercise. And usually, the seventh or eighth exercise is a bicep and a tricep move. And depending on who you talk to, they're going to say direct arm work isn't necessary anyway. Myself, I do at least eight, but I'll never do more than 10. So today I did 10 exercises at the gym and I'm still done in 25 minutes. But my personal recovery ability is, I think, compared to other people I speak with, just above and beyond. I sleep really well. I'm probably going to jinx myself right now. I never get sick. I don't get a cold. I don't get the flu. I can't remember. It's been years since I've been under the weather.
Right.
So I bounce back extremely quickly, even after training with Doug, Jay, or Drew. After 24 hours, I'm ready to go again. I take another day just for the hell of it, but I bounce back fairly quick. But I know some people need 2 or 3 days in between.
I know it's interesting. just coincidence, 8 is the number that I use with my clients. I typically do yet fewer myself, but I might work out more often because, you know, I live here, it's right behind me type of thing. So I will work out more often. But 8 is the number, and you said it's funny. The last two are probably biceps and triceps. Mm-hmm. Might be abs, might
or
be
calves. Yeah, if you want to skip it, it's not going to make or break your day.
Exactly. And to some extent, I mean, I've told clients sometimes, I say, to tell you the truth, we probably could just get away with 5 or 6, but I sometimes wonder whether people will feel, well, I'm only paying for 5 or 6 because these other ones, because we're doing biceps and triceps. But the fact is, we already did a pull down, so we already did your biceps. You know, we already did a chest press or an overhead press, so we already did your triceps. And I look at it from the point of view of, if you're building a house, there's a foundation, there's the supporting walls, but then, you know, there's some finishing things that you're going to do in a house, and some of those smaller exercises do that. But it's not going to make a huge difference one way or the other.
So. Yeah, I find with clients, you get the big 5 out of the way, you know, the pull down, chest press, row, overhead press, leg press, and then they're usually cooked. And by the time you're on the 6th or 7th, they think they got their money's worth and they don't want to do anything else anyway.
Yeah, well, and I may have created a standard. I know that Evolved Health from Calgary, and they're in different places. I don't know if you know that facility, Kirei Yanisori, nice lady who has a really nice facilities, nice MedX stuff and things like that. And her whole thing is a 15-minute workout, and it's 5 exercises, in and out. Guy just up the street from us, about 2 hours in Kingston, Quick Fit. He's got 5 MedX machines. Maybe he's got some dumbbells and whatnot, but everybody goes through the same 5 MedX machines in a row. They're in and out in 15 minutes and going. I don't see that those extra 2 or 3 make a whole lot of difference. If you're getting stronger in those, you're going to get stronger overall, right?
Yeah, it's an impossibility. If you're getting stronger at a pull down, a chest press, an overhead press, your biceps and triceps have to grow in accordance with whatever you're pushing and pulling.
Yeah.
And again, if these people have absolute no aspirations of becoming a bodybuilder or a fitness model, what would you need more than 5 or 6 exercises for? If you're going to be a magazine model and you need to see every little detail niched out, then yeah, you could do 8, 9, 10 exercises. Like I said, I do it because my recovery ability is so good. To answer your previous question, if I had a facility like that in my home, with my recovery ability bouncing back quickly, I would probably realistically do 4 exercises every other day forever. And I could probably just feel great doing that.
Right. And just cycle the different exercises.
Absolutely. Just 4 compounds every other day, or maybe throw in a bicep one day, a tricep the next day. Yeah. 4 exercises every 48 hours. I'm sure I'd be fine.
So what about nutrition? What's your nutrition looking like these days?
My nutrition is extremely boring. I fast 16 to 18 hours every single day. I have for over a decade, not because intermittent fasting is cool or whatever. I'm just never hungry until mid-afternoon. So I typically eat lunch and dinner, and I eat primarily meat and vegetables. And I have, you know, some protein shakes that I buy at Costco. But let me say this, and again, this is probably going to go against what most people would recommend, but if I didn't have to abide by any sort of societal norms as far as meeting people for lunches and dinners, I would probably eat 1 meal a day at 3 p.m. every day, and I'd be absolutely fine.
Right. Okay. You focus on animal proteins?
Yeah, I eat beef, chicken, steak, and a ton of vegetables. I try to get about 200 to 250 grams of protein per day. And I can easily do that in 2 meals.
I did a thing on this, and I don't know. Do you talk to your clients much about nutrition? Do you provide nutritional counseling, or do you just kind of stay away from that and just focus on getting them strong?
No, I'll provide absolute anything they want. I mean, I think that's why they like me as a trainer, because between the Facebook page and I answer anything via email or text within 24 hours. So yeah, a lot of people have no idea as far as nutrition. If you can just kind of gear them in the right direction. I mean, obviously they don't have to be as strict as I am, I just don't, I don't really crave, sweets or pastas or bread. So if I could have steak and chicken with vegetables every day, I could do it. I just like that type of food. But yeah, I mean, I'll counsel anybody in anything. I'm willing to help. I enjoy this. Like I said, this type of training and this type of lifestyle changed my life for the better. So I'm always willing to help anybody else that wants to take the journey.
I've found, and I don't know if it's different in different parts of the world or whatever, I found in talking to clients, of course, I've encouraged people to, track what they eat, if not forever. I say, do it for 3 days and really see, because when we talk about it, I talk about the importance of getting protein. And I've come to the conclusion that a lot of people, particularly older people, in many cases, maybe more women than men, but certainly not only women, are not eating nearly enough protein. And when I refer to it, they'll say, "Well, I think I'm eating quite a bit of protein." And I'll say, "Well, what'd you have for breakfast and or whatever?"
Bagel.
And, a bagel with some peanut butter, that's protein, right? Or
Yeah,
cream
5 grams
cheese.
maybe.
And so I say, the only way to know, because I'm asking you now, and research has shown a lot of research on nutrition that asks people what they eat and they self-estimate what they eat is notoriously incredibly inaccurate.
Oh, very.
Unless you're measuring and weighing and doing that sort of thing. But people, I have one gentleman, and interestingly, the guy is an engineering type personality and he measures all sorts of things. And he's doing the fasting thing and whatnot. He's 80 years old, good guy, smart guy, but he keeps coming back saying, "I'm really struggling with getting, the 160 grams of protein that you are saying I should get." Keep in mind, you put this in perspective. This guy weighs about 140. So,
Okay.
and I always think, how hard can it be? I mean, Greek yogurt is, you might as well just have a protein shake. It's like almost pure protein. Chicken breast is, it's incredible how much protein there is in an 8 ounce chicken breast and things
Yeah,
like that.
25, 30 grams right there. If you get a small 8 ounce fillet, you're looking at 45 or 50 grams. I mean, it's not a lot of food to choke. You hear somebody like me say 250 grams. It's not a lot of food.
No, that's about what I'm eating as, because I'm a nerd when it comes to tracking all that. I don't weigh everything, but I have gotten pretty good at eyeing things. Sometimes I do weigh it, and I rarely get less than 180. And I have hit 300 often, right?
Oh yeah,
So,
we'll hit 300 on Thanksgiving probably.
yeah, and then some other stuff as well, whatnot.
Yeah, one day won't hurt you.
So have you got any strategies to share in helping older people get more protein in terms of what you tell them and what successes you've had in getting them to up them?
I don't, the two things that I really enjoy that is extremely simplistic that I do tell a lot of my clients, because my wife and I will go to Costco every once in a while and they sell these boxes of turkey sandwiches, but the buns are made out of egg white.
Oh,
And
really?
so, yeah, they're only like 110 calories, but they're 24 grams of protein per sandwich. And then I buy cases of, I don't know if it's True something, whatever protein shakes you like, but those are 30 or 40 grams, and those are 150 calories with 1 gram of sugar and 1 gram of carbohydrate. So, I mean, if you take a little protein shake and two egg sandwiches, you're at 100 grams almost right there, and you've consumed 600 calories. It's
Right.
really easy if you think about it. I mean, like you said, throw some chicken breasts on the grill and put the rest in Tupperware.
Exactly. Yeah, but it's interesting that one of the reasons that I sort of shy away from nutritional advice, I mean, I give the advice, but I guess it's whether they follow it or not. I.e., because in the when they come into my studio, I control what's happening for, the 30 or 40 minutes that they're here with me. When they leave here, I have no control whatsoever. And so it's difficult. And eating habits are habits that have been formed over a lifetime.
Correct.
So telling somebody that, instead of having a bowl of cornflakes, cook yourself a couple of eggs, and whatnot, is it's hard for people to change their habits. So
It's hard, but on the flip side of that, if they actually tried it for like a solid 30 days, I think they would be amazed as to how much better they would feel without eating the bran flakes or the frosted flakes and the carbs and the pastas, and just stick to meat and vegetables. Yes, it's redundantly boring, but I feel amazing every day. So why would I change that up? Like, I know what a plate of pasta is going to do to me. If I order a fettuccine Alfredo, it's going to be delicious and I'm going to feel sick the next day. Legitimately, I will feel ill for 12 hours of my next day. So why even waste my time with that?
yeah, well, I just went through. It was my birthday yesterday, and it was we had company over the weekend, and we had an annual. My wife has her cousins over, and they have a potluck kind of early Christmas brunch.
Okay, so you got all
Which,
sorts of sugared up.
oh man, and of course, once you start on these things, it's like a domino effect. So I've been sort of. And you're right. It tasted good. I mean, there's all these wonderful cooks and do baking and all these stuff, but you feel bleh, right?
Yeah.
You almost feel ill is not an exaggeration. You feel ill
Yeah,
when
I
you eat like
physically
that.
feel ill, and I can immediately tell the next morning if I eat anything that was crappy because my wedding ring will not come off my finger in the morning because my hands
Right.
will be so swollen.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. I've used that too as a measurement. I mean,
Yeah.
there's all these in-body tools and bod pods
Yeah,
and
try to get
exercise.
your ring off. That's my tool. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I've told people that because they come on and I've got a body composition tool here and whatnot. And I say, it's a fancy thing. It gives us fancy numbers. It gives us these fancy reports. But you got a favorite pair of jeans that you put on. Pretty much, if it's hard to tie it up, you got an issue. And if it's nice and loose and you got things are going in the right direction. And it's
Yeah.
probably as good as anything that you're going to use. What's your thoughts now? You're using strictly machines, or do you use some free weights as well, combination?
Me personally or my clients?
Both, I guess.
I use all machines now.
Okay.
Yeah, and if possible with whatever gym I'm in, I will have my clients use all machines. Some gyms randomly won't have like some key pieces like a row, surprisingly, or some gyms I go to don't have an overhead press, so I'll have to substitute dumbbells, which isn't the end of the world. It's okay, but I prefer machines, and I would love to, have my clients use only machines just because it's safer. You don't have to worry about dropping anything. You don't have to worry about stabilizing anything. And you just, if you're too fatigued, you just set it down and take a break. There's no exit point that you have to worry about with dumbbells or free weights.
It's interesting. I'm going to change the gears here real quick. Is on the one hand, we sometimes lament, and maybe we shouldn't even care, and to hell with what anybody else is doing, that HIIT and proper training is not more mainstream, and then there's all these ridiculous things that are mainstream. But I think there's on the one hand, you could say, well, what are they doing right and what are we doing wrong? That's the mainstream and we're not, even though this has been around since the 70s. But the other side of the coin is, and I don't know this for a fact, but I'm pretty sure, is that most people who have HIIT clients have very low turnover. Meaning that many people will report, I've only been at it now for 3.5 years, but I've had clients from the very beginning. I have very few people leave, and sometimes they've moved away and whatnot, but as far as someone who just stops doing it because they just don't keep up with the program. So while the other types of things are mainstream, the turnover on that side is incredibly high. You get very few people who stick to it long term.
Yeah, the turnover is high on their side, and the risk of injury is very high on their side. And I've yet to have a client injured. And if a HIIT client does quit, they're usually going to do it within 2 to 3 sessions because it's not their thing and it's a little too hard. If you can get them past 3 or 4 sessions and they start feeling better, looking better, you've got them forever.
You kind of wonder if consciously or maybe subconsciously, high turnover is intended
Oh,
in.
in big box gyms, absolutely, it's intended because that's the way they make more memberships.
Right. Right.
Yeah,
Well,
I mean, January is around the corner, as you well know. I mean, the gyms that I train in now are going to be slammed with all the newbies from now until probably February 14th to the 21st, and then they all go away, and then it's all the regular folks again. But the gym makes an astronomical amount of money from now until January 15th, and then people quit after 4 to 5 weeks,
Now,
unfortunately.
is there a regulations around here in Canada? They have rules about what gyms can do as far as charge yearly memberships and then not pay them, or I guess they get around that with sort of pre-authorized checking arrangements. And people don't come, but they can cancel anytime they want, but people don't cancel because in their minds that would be quitting and they keep meaning to go back. And actually canceling their pre-authorized checking arrangement is sort of admitting to themselves that they've messed up. So they keep thinking, I'm going back next week. I'm going to go back next week. And then this goes on for 7 months where they've paid for 7 months and never showed up.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the standard quo. You know, if you were a gym owner, you would love December and January. You know, everybody signs up, and then the same 20 people that you don't make money off of, because for me, for example, I signed up at my gym, which is NCH, and they got all hammer strength equipment. But if you sign up for the year, they give you a 15% discount versus just billing you the same amount every single month, and you can quit at any time. But like you said, people will be like, oh, well, next month I'll start. Next month I'll start. So they keep getting billed and they never go.
It's interesting. You use the term a higher risk of injury. In my, you know, and one of the things I love Doug McGuff. I think he's a great guy. I owe him a lot. I've learned a lot from him. But I know it's sometimes he's used the term just lift weights, and I sort of kind of go, you know, maybe at least that just lift weights safely. Type of thing. And I actually had a discussion with him. And Doug, if you're listening to this and you want to correct me in the comments, whatnot, feel free to do so. But he's like I said, everybody, not some of the people who come to me, not most of them, all the people who have a background where they've been exercisers or athletes and whatnot, they all have a list of injuries. Right? Because they ask, as you do, I'm sure, ask questions. You say, you know, is there anything I should be aware of? You had any problems with the back? They all do. And Doug's answer was, well, that's because to some extent you're getting that population because you're getting a population for whom the other stuff hasn't worked and they gravitate towards you as opposed to maybe some people. But I don't know if you watched, I did a podcast also with Rich Robichaux, which was interesting because Rich used to be a CrossFit instructor. And Rich, you know, was among CrossFit instructors. I know this is a pretty low standard, but he was really going out of his way to try to make sure people didn't do incredibly stupid things, right? As opposed to just stupid things, which I'm sure he would admit. But he said, he came to the realization that despite any precautions he might take, it wasn't a matter of if they got hurt, it was a matter of when they'd get hurt. Right? It simply happened. And I think part of that is because people confuse exercise and sports.
I mean, they're two completely separate definitions, and most people don't realize that. You know,
Well,
if you're exercising, you should never get injured if you're exercising properly. You should be benefiting. Obviously, if you're playing a sport, it is a risk of injury, but you're having fun, so you're willing to take that risk. If you're exercising, there should be a 0% chance of injury.
On the weekend, my brother-in-law was visiting, and I don't watch sports on TV for whatever reason. It's not what I like to watch. But he was there, so I tried to find some things on the channels about various sports, and it got onto NFL football, and we got onto soccer. And I was interested in listening to the commentators talk about the players and whatnot, how much of the conversation was about injured players and whether, you know, strategically the team would be able to win because of the number of injuries they had, or whether this or that key player was going to be back in time. And part of me kind of goes, all right, these guys are making, you know, big salaries and things like that. So they're getting hurt. They're putting their bodies on the line, which is why I don't begrudge these guys the salaries they make because they're paying a high price too. But the weekend warriors who are doing it for fun are also getting hurt.
Yeah, I mean, just personally being in Florida, the dumbest thing, literally the dumbest thing that I see in the pursuit of fitness is every Saturday morning, groups of probably 25 to 30 cyclists riding down busy roads on highways next to cars in the pursuit of health. And then one or two times a year, we open the newspaper and a cyclist gets run over. And they make some asinine thing like, well, it's time to change the rules of the road. Fellas, go ride anywhere else. Why are we
Well,
riding on the road? You got forest preserves? You got anywhere else to go?
not only, but you know what? Even without Trevor, I agree with you, first of all. I mean, when you are in a car and you see a cyclist on the side of the road, and you realize how, now it's odd, especially if you're meeting a car at the same time and you're trying not to hit the car, not to hit the cyclist, makes me realize I don't want to be on that bike because I just missed that guy by a foot.
Yes, if a
But
foot, yeah.
even that, like you get older people, they go, I don't want to do jogging because it's hard on my knees. So I'm going to get a cycle, a bike because it's easier. But if you're 70 and you slip on the carpet and fall, you're likely to hurt yourself. Now, if you're driving a bike on a gravel road or an asphalt road, even if you're not going very fast, and these bikes can go pretty fast. And now they got e-bikes, which will get you to 35 miles an hour. If you wipe out, you hit some loose gravel and you wipe out on a bike, never mind. When you're 34, you take a plunge off of a bike going 25 miles an hour, you're getting hurt. And if you're 70, I had one of my clients, and he went out and spent $5,000 on an e-bike. And this guy was like 74 years old. And I was like, you know, well, good luck because you just got to tumble one
One
time,
time.
right?
Yeah.
So you're right. I think cycling is you know, not only getting hit by a car, obviously, but even just you wipe out. Because I remember when I was a kid and I had a bike, every now and then, once a year, I would take a tumble, right? It's almost inevitable if you ride a bike that you're gonna take a tumble once in a while. And if
Yeah,
you're
but people still come back to stupid activities. Like I'm in several different gyms every day and I see the utmost silliest things, those TRX classes. Oh my God, they have those people just hanging off of those silly straps doing the most meaningless things. But again, I get the mentality as far as the group camaraderie. I think they need it for self-esteem. They're not people like you and I and the rest of the HIIT crew where we go to the gym to be by ourselves, to kick the crap out of ourselves for 20 minutes and get out of there because the gym isn't a social aspect for us. It's just a means to an end.
Well, I think, you know, the reason I said the comparison to sports, in sports, injuries are accepted. And I think we have a blind spot when it comes to that because people think of sports as a good thing. And I'm not saying they're bad, but we glorify them while completely ignoring it. Like if your kids get involved with sports, people are proud. Oh, my son's on the baseball team. He made the baseball team. He made this, he made that. But they're getting hurt. There's some prices to pay for that. And we seem to have a blind spot over it. But when it carries over to exercise, because we've so wholeheartedly accepted injuries as part of sports, then we don't bat an eye. Nobody asks the question, geez, I got hurt doing TRX. I got hurt doing CrossFit. What's wrong with TRX? What's wrong with CrossFit? They just go, well, that's just part and parcel with the deal. They don't do so. It's like a huge blind spot that people
Yeah, it's a
have.
piggyback off of what you just said. The most ridiculous thing I've ever seen, and I think it might have been Drew that made me actually go look at a CrossFit website, which I would never intend to do, but just for the sake of argument, I did. And they have a subsection on their website. It's like a people work, they can post different blogs, and they have hundreds of thousands of people in this blog dedicated to their injuries. Not only their injuries, but how to keep doing the thing that got them injured and work around the injury. So it's like, yes, CrossFit hurt me and I can't feel my left arm, but what can I do with my right? Are you out of your mind? Like,
Well, Runner's World magazine
oh,
will always have an article
how to run through it.
how to avoid shin splints, how to get better shoes, how to improve your running technique, how to do these various things. So, yeah, and it's interesting. I don't know if you were aware, there was a lawsuit that CrossFit and sued, I forget if it was the National Strength and Conditioning Association, but one of these associations, because they made the statement that CrossFit was dangerous. And they sued them for slander or defamation or
Yeah,
whatever it
defamation
is.
of character.
And they won.
Oh, wow.
But get this though, if you read the fine print, here's what I'm paraphrasing here, but here's what the ruling came up with, which was CrossFit is no more dangerous than other sporting activities. Well, that's a really low standard.
Yeah, I mean, other sporting activities can include blindside tackling. Have you seen one of those? I mean,
Arthur Jones, I don't know if you're aware of this quote. He used to say, if there was a new illness that suddenly came out that caused the number of emergency room visits annually in the United States that are caused by people doing various things in the pursuit of fitness, people would start organizing foundations and research projects and things like that to find a cure for this horrible illness. And yet, people are doing these things and they're not only have the blind spot, they're actually glorifying it. Right?
yeah.
So.
Well, we found the nice little subset category of us that like enjoy not being injured and feeling good every day.
Yeah, exactly. So now, for your Facebook page, Blaine,
Yeah.
where do you see it going? Have you thought about somehow taking this and some maybe monetizing or making it exclusive or doing anything? So
No,
you.
not right now. I mean, it exceeded my expectations. Honestly, when I joined it, I thought it was going to be people like you and Drew and Doug and Dre and Jay and maybe 50 people at the most. And within 3 weeks, it got up to 280, 300 people. And like you and I were discussing earlier, the cool thing about it, and I get so many Facebook messages that I truly appreciate saying, I love your group because there's no bickering and because there's no arguing. And there
Right.
really isn't. I think I've had to boot one guy that was being belligerent, and that's the only person I've ever booted because everybody's doing something different. We're kind of all on the same page, but we're not bickering that super slow is the only way, or exercise order is the only way, or you need this amount of days off. Whereas they get into those, crap throwing contests and the other hit pages, which is why I left. But I'm just glad people are actually enjoying it, and I enjoy it because there's a lot of good discussions going on there and a lot of good members making me think about things or making me research questions that I didn't have the answers to that I can then in turn answer them or help my clients with. And nobody argues. It's great.
Well, I really appreciate that, and I put a post a while ago there. Let me know if I'm posting too much on there, my
Oh, go ahead.
ramblings
I
and
like
things
your
like
posts.
that. So, by all means, feel free. But because, of course, it's helped me because people from your page are going on to my YouTube page and things like that. So it's helped me. I'm hoping eventually that there will be a greater and greater following. But at the end of the day, I'm doing it because, I. Like you said, we found something that works, and we want to help people to do the same. And it's interesting. I'm sure you have had the same experience. When you sit down with a new client, you explain what you do and why you do it, the way you do it. Typically, it just makes sense to them once they sit down and listen to it. Have you had? I bet you, and maybe I stand to be corrected here. Have you had somebody where you sat down and explained what you were going to do, and before you even got started, they said, "Oh, you don't know what you're talking about," and walked out on you?
Not necessarily walked out. I've had a lot of people just quit and not believe. I don't know if it comes off as like lying when I say I literally, I don't know what my training frequency is. I'll go one every couple days, whatever. But I know I don't exercise more than 1 hour a week. And to be in the type of shape that I am at 6'5", 240 pounds with visible abs, you command a room when you walk in. And when people ask, oh, you must live in the gym, or you, I'm sitting on my couch or in my pool 5 days a week. If I'm not training, I'm not working out with these people. So I think it's either that or just people don't believe you, unfortunately. It's almost, I don't know, like my friend Mike says, I train with him every Saturday. He says it's almost too simple because it's not, people need complicated. And I don't know, my buddy Mike is a good testament to this type of stuff, because when I found him, he was an avid cyclist that was cycling, 5, 6 days a week, multiple miles, just kicking the crap out of himself. And I just, hey, give this a try. And after training with me twice a week for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, he's hung up the bike. And I was at his condo the other day, and he's like, I've never felt better in my life. He's in his mid-50s. He's like, I feel like I'm younger. He's like, I can't believe I've added muscle mass. I'm leaner. I can eat more food. I feel better. And I cut my training time down by 10 hours a week.
And his knees feel better from not
Everything
being
about
on
him
that
feels
pillow.
better. He looks like he's more vibrant when he walks around. Before, his face was sunken in and he looked, skinny and sick. And now his arms and chest and back are filling out. And he's got 5 days a week to do whatever the heck else he wants to do, that he's not cycling 80 miles.
Well, and yeah, it's interesting. I had a client come in and says, I'm going to see how the leg press is going to go today. My knees are a bit sore.
Yeah,
I
what did
said,
you
okay,
do?
what have you been doing? Oh, I've
Dancing.
been doing my bike rides and whatnot. I said, you don't want to overdo that. Oh, he says, I'm not. I said, well, how long is your bike ride? Well, about an hour. And he's, depending, and he says, I go at a regular speed, but in an hour, if you're on a bike for an hour, you've got to be doing, I don't know, well,
20 miles? I don't know.
10, 20 miles, right? Type of
Yeah,
thing.
easily.
So, and I'm just saying, that's, and but of course, once people are into it, it's a little hard. So I try not to tell them to stop. I just say, well, just go easy. Just know that anything that's very repetitive in nature takes its toll, right?
Yeah.
But listen, I appreciate it. I'm looking at the clock. I have a client coming in shortly, but it's been nice chatting
Me
again.
too.
Good stuff. I found a highlight for me. I asked you how many exercises that you get your clients to do, and we have the same number of clients, and it sounds like we're doing, you'd think we discussed this in advance, but pretty much, what I think you do a few big exercises. Oh, by the way, I use an A, B, C, D routine. I do eight exercises, but they're not the same eight every time. Now, mind you, I have the luxury of having, 22 different machines in here that I
Yeah.
can cycle around. Do you move it around, or does it tend to be fairly the same workout?
No, I cycle everything. So if I do, I like to do two back, two chest, a leg, shoulders, but I'll do like today I did a incline chest press and the second was a pec deck. The next time I might do a chest fly with a regular chest press. I might do a hammer strength pull down, a different type of pull down. I always try to just alternate and mess around just for the sake of variety. I don't do the same thing in the same order every time.
And
So
a lot of times we're going earlier when people say, why do you do this or that? It's like variety. And in my case, I got all these toys, so I'm like a kid in a toy store. I like to play with my toys. If I have a machine, I'm going to use
yeah, like I said, if I had your setup, I'd be doing something every other day for sure. So,
Well, I look forward to seeing you on Facebook, and I thank you very much for taking the time today. Always a pleasure. Look forward to doing it again in the future, sir.
yeah, we'll do it another 6 months to a year.
All right, sounds
All
good.
right, have a good
Take
day. Have a good
care.
Thanksgiving.
Same to you. Bye for
Thank
now.
you. Bye-bye.